This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Elizabeth Palmer, Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. Moll Flanders by Daniel Defoe. Section 9. When I parted with my brother, for such I am now to call him, we agreed that after I arrived he should pretend to have an account that I was dead in England, and so might marry again when he would. He promised and engaged to correspond with me as a sister, and to assist and support me as long as I lived, and that, if he died before me, he would leave sufficient to his mother to take care of me still, in the name of a sister, and he was in some respects careful of me, when he heard of me. But it was so oddly managed that I felt the disappointments very sensibly afterwards, as you shall hear in its time. I came away for England in the month of August, after I had been 8 years in that country, and now a new scene of misfortunes attended me, which perhaps few women have gone through the life of. We had an indifferent good voyage till we came just upon the coast of England, and where we arrived in 2 and 30 days, but were then ruffled with 2 or 3 storms, one of which drove us away to the coast of Ireland, and we put in at Kinsale. We remained there about 13 days, got some refreshment on shore, and put to sea again, though we met with very bad weather again, in which the ship sprung her mainmast, as they called it, for I knew not what they meant. But we got at last into Milford Haven, in Wales, where, though it was remote from our port, yet having my foot safe upon firm ground of my native country, the Isle of Britain, I resolved to venture it no more upon the waters, which had been so terrible to me. So getting my clothes and money on shore, with my bills of loading and other papers, I resolved to come for London, and leave the ship to get her port as she could. The port whither she was bound was to Bristol, where my brother's chief correspondent lived. I got to London in about 3 weeks, where I heard a little while after that the ship was arrived in Bristol, but at the same time had the misfortune to know that by the violent weather she had been in, the breaking of her mainmast, she had great damage on board, and that a great part of her cargo was spoiled. I had now a new scene of life upon my hands, and a dreadful appearance it had. I was come away with a kind of final farewell. What I brought with me was indeed considerable, had it come safe, and by the help of it I might have married again tolerably well. But as it was, I was reduced to between 200 or 300 pounds in the whole, and this without any hope of recruit. I was entirely without friends, nay, even so much as without acquaintance, for I found it was absolutely necessary not to revive former acquaintances. As for my subtle friend that set me up formerly for a fortune, she was dead, and her husband also, as I was informed, upon sending a person unknown to inquire. The looking after my cargo of goods soon after obliged me to take a journey to Bristol, and during my attendance upon that affair I took the diversion of going to the bath, for as I was still far from being old, so my humor, which was always gay, continued so to an extreme, and being now, as it were, a woman of fortune, though I was a woman without a fortune, I expected something or other might happen my way that might mend my circumstances, as had been my case before. The bath is a place of gallantry enough, expensive, and full of snares. I went thither, indeed, in view of taking anything that might offer, but I must do myself justice as to protest I knew nothing amiss. I meant nothing but in an honest way, nor had I any thoughts about me at first that looked the way which afterwards I suffered them to be guided. Here I stayed the whole later season, as it is called there, and contracted some unhappy acquaintances, which rather prompted the follies I fell afterwards into than fortified me against them. I lived pleasantly enough, kept good company, that is to say, gay, fine company, but had the discouragement to find this way of living sunk me exceedingly, and that, as I had no settled income, so spending upon the main stock was but a certain kind of bleeding to death, and this gave me many sad reflections in the interval of my other thoughts. However, I shook them off, and still flattered myself that something or other might offer my advantage. But I was in the wrong place for it. I was not now at Redriff, where, if I had set myself tolerably up, some honest sea captain or other might have talked with me upon the honorable terms of matrimony, but I was at the bath, where men find a mistress sometimes, but very rarely look for a wife, and consequently, all the particular acquaintances a woman can expect to make there must have some tendency that way. I had spent the first season well enough, for though I had contracted some acquaintance with the gentleman who came to the bath for his diversion, yet I had entered into no fallacious treaty, as it might be called. I had resisted some casual offers of gallantry, and had managed that way well enough. I was not wicked enough to come into the crime for the mere vice of it, and I had no extraordinary offers made me that tempted me with the main thing which I wanted. However, I went this length the first season, viz., I contracted an acquaintance with a woman in whose house I lodged, who, though she did not keep an ill house, as we call it, yet had none of the best principles in herself. I had on all occasions behaved myself so well as not to get the least slur upon my reputation, on any account whatever, and all the men that I had conversed with were of so good reputation that I had not given the least reflection by conversing with them, nor did any of them seem to think that there was room for a wicked correspondence, if they had any of them offered it. Yet there was one gentleman, as above, who always singled me out for the diversion of my company, as he called it, which, as he was pleased to say, was very agreeable to him, but at that time there was no more in it. I had many melancholy hours at the bath after the company was gone, for though I went to Bristol sometime for disposing of my effects and for recruits of money, yet I chose to come back to Bath for my residence, because being on good terms with the woman in whose house I lodged in the summer, I found that during the winter I lived rather cheaper there than I could anywhere else. Here, I say, I passed the winter as heavily as I had passed the autumn cheerfully, but having contracted a nearer intimacy with the said woman in whose house I lodged, I could not avoid communicating to her something of what lay hardest upon my mind, and particularly the narrowness of my circumstances, and the loss of my fortune by the damage of my goods at sea. I told her also that I had a mother and a brother in Virginia, in good circumstances, and as I had really written back to my mother in particular to represent my condition, and the great loss I had received, which indeed came to almost £500, so I did not fail to let my new friend know that I expected a supply from thence, and so indeed I did. And as the ships went from Bristol to York River in Virginia, and back again generally in less time from London, and that my brother corresponded chiefly at Bristol, I thought it was much better for me to wait here for my returns than to go to London, where also I had not the least acquaintance. My new friend appeared sensibly affected with my condition, and indeed was so very kind as to reduce the rate of my living with her to so low a price during the winter that she convinced me she got nothing by me, and as for lodging, during the winter, I paid nothing at all. When the spring season came on, she continued to be as kind to me as she could, and I lodged with her for a time, till it was found necessary to do otherwise. She had some persons of character that frequently lodged in her house, and in particular the gentleman who, as I said, singled me out for his companion the winter before, and he came down again with another gentleman in his company and two servants, and lodged in the same house. I suspected that my landlady had invited him thither, letting him know that I was still with her, but she denied it, and protested to me that she did not, and he said the same. In a word, this gentleman came down and continued to single me out for his peculiar confidence as well as conversation. He was a complete gentleman, that must be confessed, and his company was very agreeable to me as mine, if I might believe him, was to him. He made no professions to be but an extraordinary respect, and he has such an opinion of my virtue that, as he often professed, he believed if he should offer anything else, I should reject him with contempt. He soon understood from me that I was a widow, that I had arrived at Bristol from Virginia by the last ships, and that I awaited at Bath till the next Virginia fleet should arrive, by which I expected considerable effects. I understood by him, and by others of him, that he had a wife, but that the lady was distempered in her head, and was under the conduct of her own relations, which he consented to avoid any reflections that might, as was not unusual in such cases, be cast on him for mismanaging her cure. And in the meantime, he came to the bath to divert his thoughts from the disturbance of such a melancholy circumstance as that was. My landlady, who of her own accord encouraged the correspondence on all occasions, gave me an advantageous character of him as a man of honor and of virtue, as well as of great estate. And indeed, I had a great deal of reason to say so of him too, for though we lodged both on a floor, and he had frequently come into my chamber, even when I was in bed, and I also into his when he was in bed, yet he never offered anything to me further than a kiss, or so much as solicited me to anything till long after, as you shall hear. I frequently took notice to my landlady of his exceeding modesty, and she again used to tell me, she believed it was so from the beginning. However, she used to tell me that she thought I ought to expect some gratification from him for my company, for indeed he did, as it were, engross me, and I was seldom from him. I told her I had not given him the least occasion to think I wanted it, or that I would accept it from him. She told me that she would take that part upon her, and she did so, and managed it so dexterously, that the first time we were together alone, after she had talked with him, he began to inquire a little into my circumstances, as how I had subsisted myself since I came on shore, and whether I did not want money. I stood off very boldly. I told him that the merchant that I had been co-signed to had so honestly managed for me that I had not wanted, and that I hoped, with frugal management, I should make it hold out till more would come, which I expected by the next fleet, that in the meantime I had entrenched my expenses, and whereas I kept a maid last season, now I lived without, and whereas I had a chamber and a dining room, then on the first floor, as he knew, I now had but one room, two pair of stairs, and the like. But I live, said I, as well satisfied now as I did then, adding that his company had been a means to make me live much more cheerfully than otherwise I should have done, for which I was much obliged to him, and so I put off all room for any offer for the present. However, it was not long before he attacked me again, and told me he found that I was backward to trust him with the secret of my circumstances, which he was sorry for, assuring me that he inquired into it with no design to satisfy his own curiosity, but merely to assist me, if there was any occasion. But since I would not own myself to stand in need of any assistance, he had but one thing more to desire of me, and that was that I would promise him that when I was any way straitened, or like it to be so, I would frankly tell him of it, and that I would make use of him with the same freedom that he made the offer, adding that I should always find I had a true friend, though perhaps I was afraid to trust him. I admitted nothing that was fit to be said by one indefinitely obliged, to let him know that I had a due sense of his kindness, and indeed, from that time, I did not appear so much reserved to him as I had done before, though still within the bounds of the strictest virtue on both sides. But how free soever our conversation was, I could not arrive to that sort of freedom which he desired, to tell him I wanted money, though I was secretly very glad of his offer. Some weeks passed after this, and still I never asked him for money, when my landlady, a cunning creature, who had often pressed me to it, but found that I could not do it, makes a story of her own inventing, and comes in bluntly to me when we were together. "Oh, widow," says she, "I have bad news to tell you this morning." "What is that?" said I. "Are the Virginia ships taken by the French?" For that was my fear. "No, no," says she. "But the man you sent to Bristol yesterday for money is come back, and says he has brought none." Now I could by no means like her project. I thought it looked too much like prompting him, which indeed he did not want, and I clearly saw that I should lose nothing by being backward to ask, so I took her up short. "I can't imagine why he should say so to you," said I, "for I assure you he brought me all the money I sent him for, and here it is," said I, pulling out my purse with about 12 guineas in it, and added, "I intend you shall have most of it by and by." He seemed distasted a little at her talking, as she did at first, as well as I, taking it, as I fancied he would, as something forward of her. But when he saw me give such an answer, he came immediately to himself again. The next morning we talked of it again, when I found he was fully satisfied, and smiling, said he hoped I would not want money, and not tell him of it, and that I had promised him otherwise. I told him I had been very much dissatisfied at my landlady's talking so publicly the day before of what she had nothing to do with, but I suppose she wanted what I owed her, which was about 8 guineas, which I had resolved to give her, and had, accordingly, given it to her the same night she talked so foolishly. He was in right good humor when he heard me say I had paid her, and it went off into some other discourse at that time. But the next morning, he having heard me up about my room before him, he called to me, and I, answering, he asked me to come into his chamber. He was in bed when I came in, and he made me come and sit down on his bedside, for he said he had something to say to me, which was of some moment. After some very kind expressions, he asked me if I would be very honest to him, and give a sincere answer to one thing he would desire of me. After some cavil at the word sincere, and asking him if I had ever given him any answers which were not sincere, I promised him I would. Why, then, his request was, he said, to let him see my purse. I immediately put my hand into my pocket, and, laughing to him, pulled it out, and there was in it 3 guineas and a half. Then he asked me if there was all the money I had. I told him no, laughing again, not by a great deal. Well, then, he said, he would have me promise to go and fetch him all the money I had, every farthing. I told him I would, and I went into my chamber and fetched him a little private drawer, where I had about 6 guineas more, and some silver, and threw it all down upon the bed, and I told him there was all my wealth, honestly, to a shilling. He looked a little at it, but did not tell it, and huddled it into the drawer again. And then, reaching his pocket, pulled out a key, and bade me open a little walnut tree box he had upon the table, and bring him such a drawer, which I did, in which drawer there was a great deal of money and gold, I believe near 200 guineas, but I knew not how much. He took the drawer, and, taking my hand, made me put it in, and take a whole handful. I was backward at that, but he held my hand hard in his hand, and put it in the drawer, and made me take out as many guineas almost as I could take up at once. When I had done so, he made me put them into my lap, and took my little drawer, and poured out all my money among his, and bade me to get me gone, and carry it all home into my own chamber. I related this story, the more particularly because of the good humor there was in it, and to show the temper with which we conversed. It was not long after this, but he began every day to find fault with my clothes, and my laces, and headdresses, and, in a word, pressed me to buy better, in which, by the way, I was willing enough to do, but I did not seem to be so, for I loved nothing in the world better than fine clothes. I told him I must housewife the money he had lent me, or else I should not be able to pay him again. He then told me, in a few words, that as he had a sincere respect for me, and knew my circumstances, he had not lent me that money, but given it to me, and that he thought I had merited it from him by giving him my company so entirely as I had done. After this, he made me take a maid and keep house, and his friend that came with him to Bath, being gone, he obliged me to dine at him, which I did very willingly, believing, as it appeared, that I should lose nothing by it, nor did the woman of the house fail to find her account in it too. We had lived thus near 3 months, when, the company beginning to wear away at the Bath, he talked of going away, and fain he would have me go to London with him. I was not very easy in that proposal, not knowing what posture I was to live in there, or how he might use me. But while this was in debate, he fell very sick. He had gone out to a place in Somersetshire called Shepton, where he had some business, and was there taken very ill, and so ill that he could not travel. So he sent his men back to Bath to beg me that I would hire a coach and come over to him. Before he went, he had left all his money and other things of value with me, and what to do with them I did not know, but I secured them as well as I could, and locked up the lodgings, and went to him, where I found him very ill indeed. However, I persuaded him to be carried in a litter to the Bath, where there was more help and better advice to be had. He consented, and I brought him to the Bath, which is about 15 miles, as I remember. Here he continued very ill, of a fever, and kept his bed 5 weeks, all which time I nursed him and tended him myself, as much and as carefully as I had been his wife. Indeed, if I had been his wife, I could not have done more. I sat up with him so much and so often that at last, indeed, he would not let me sit up any longer, and then I got a pallet bed into his room, and lay in it just at his bed's feet. I was indeed sensibly affected with his condition, and with the apprehension of losing such a friend as he was, and was like to be to me, and I used to sit and cry by him many hours together. However, at last he grew better, and gave hopes that he would recover, as indeed he did, though very slowly. Were it otherwise than what I am going to say, I should not be backward to disclose it, as it is apparent that I have done in other cases in this account. But I affirm that through all of this conversation, abating the freedom of coming into the chamber when I or he was in bed, and abating the necessary offices of attending him night and day when he was sick, there had not passed the least immodest word or action between us. Oh, that it had been so to the last! After some time he gathered strength and grew well apace, and I would have removed my pallet bed, but he would not let me, till he was able to venture himself without anybody to sit up with him, and then I removed to my own chamber. He took many occasions to express his sense of tenderness and concern for him, and when he grew quite well, he made me a present of 50 guineas for my care and, as he called it, for hazarding my life to save his. And now he made deep protestations of a sincere, inviolable affection for me, but all along I protested it to be with the utmost reserve for my virtue and his own. I told him I was fully satisfied of it. He carried it that length that he protested to me that if he was naked in bed with me, he was as sacredly preserved my virtue as he would defend it if I was assaulted by a ravisher. I believed him, and told him I did so, but this did not satisfy him. He would, he said, wait for some opportunity to give me an undoubted testimony of it. It was a great while after this that I had occasion, on my own business, to go to Bristol, upon which he hired me a coach, and would go with me, and did so. And now indeed our intimacy increased. From Bristol he carried me to Gloucester, which was merely a journey of pleasure, to take the air, and here it was our hap to have no lodging in the inn, but in one large chamber with two beds in it. The master of the house going up with us to show his rooms, and coming into that room, said very frankly to him, "Sir, it is none of my business to inquire whether the lady be your spouse or no, but if not, you may lie as honestly as these two beds as if you were in two chambers." And with that he pulls a great curtain, which drew quite across the room, and effectually divided the beds. "Well," says my friend, very readily, "these beds will do, and as for the rest, we are too near akin to lie together, though we may lodge near one another." And this put an honest face on the thing, too. When we came to go to bed, he decently went out of the room till I was in bed, and then went to bed in the bed on his own side of the room, but lay there talking to me a great while. At last, repeating his usual saying that he could lie naked in the bed with me and not offer me the least injury, he starts out of his bed. "And now, my dear," says he, "you shall see how just I will be to you, and that I can keep my word." And away he comes to my bed. I resisted a little, but I must confess I should not have resisted him much if he had not made those promises at all. So after a little struggle, as I said, I lay still and let him come to bed. When he was there, he took me in his arms, and so I lay all night with him. But he had no more to do with me, or offered anything to me, other than embracing me, as I say, in his arms. No, not the whole night, but rose up and dressed him in the morning, and left me as innocent for him as I was the day I was born. This was a surprising thing to me, and perhaps may be so to others, who know how the laws of nature work, for he was a strong, vigorous, brisk person. Nor did he act thus on a principle of religion at all, but of mere affection, insisting on it, that though I was to him the most agreeable woman in the world, yet, because he loved me, he could not injure me. I own it was a noble principle, but as it was that I was never understood before, so it was to me perfectly amazing. We travelled the rest of the journey as we did before, and came back to the bath, where, as he had opportunity to come to me when he would, he often repeated the moderation, and I frequently lay with him, and he with me, And although all the familiarities between man and wife were common to us, yet he never once offered to go any further, and he valued himself much upon it. I do not say that I was so wholly pleased with it as he thought I was, for I own much wickeder than he, as you shall hear presently. As he had furnished me very sufficiently with money for the extraordinary expenses of my lying in, I had everything very handsome about me, but did not affect to be gay or extravagant neither. Besides, knowing my own circumstances, and knowing the world as I had done, and that such kind things did not often last long, I took care to lie up as much money as I could for a wet day, as I called it, making him believe it was all spent upon the extraordinary appearance of things in my lying in. By this means, and including what he had given me as above, I had at the end of my lying in about 200 guineas by me, including also what was left of my own. I was brought to bed of a fine boy indeed, and a charming child it was, and when he heard of it, he wrote me a very kind, obliging letter about it, and then told me he thought it would look better for me to come away for London as soon as I was up and well, that he had provided apartments for me at Hammersmith, as if I had come thither only from London, and that after a little while I should go back to the Bath, and he would go with me. I liked this offer very well, and accordingly hired a coach on purpose, and taking my child and a wet nurse to tend and suckle it, and a maidservant with me, away I went for London. He met me at Reading in his own chariot, and taking me into that, I left the servant and the child in the hired coach, and so he brought me to my new lodgings at Hammersmith, with which I had abundance of reason to be very well pleased, for they were very handsome rooms, and I was very well accommodated. And now I was indeed in the height of what I might call my prosperity, and I wanted nothing but to be a wife, which, however, could not be in this case. There was no room for it, and therefore, on all occasions, I studied to save what I could, as I have said above, against a time of scarcity, knowing well enough that such things as these do not always continue, that men that keep mistresses often change them, grow weary of them, or jealous of them, or something or other happens to make them withdraw their bounty, and sometimes the ladies that are thus well used are not careful by a prudent conduct to preserve the esteem of their persons, or the nice article of their fidelity, and then they are justly cast off with contempt. But I was secured in this point, for as I have no inclination to change, so I had no manner of acquaintance in the whole house, and so no temptation to look any farther. I kept no company but in the family when I lodged, and with the clergyman's lady at next door, so that when he was absent I visited nobody, nor did he ever find me out of my chamber or parlor whenever he came down. If I went anywhere to take the air, it was always with him. The living in this manner with him, and his with me, was certainly the most undesigned thing in the world. He often protested to me that when he became first acquainted with me, and even to the very night when we first broke it upon our rules, he never had the least design of lying with me, that he always had a sincere affection for me, but not the least real inclination to do what he had done. I assured him I never suspected him, that if I had, I should not so easily have yielded to the freedom which brought it on, but that it was all a surprise, and was owing to the accident of our having yielded too far to our mutual inclinations that night. And indeed, I had often observed since, and leave it as a caution to the readers of the story, that we ought to be cautious of gratifying our inclinations in loose and lewd freedoms, lest we find our resolutions of virtue fail us in the junction when their assistance should be most necessary. It is true, and I have confessed it before, that from the first hour I began to converse with him, I resolved to let him lie with me, if he offered it, but it was because I wanted his help and assistance, and I knew no other way of securing him than that. But when we were that night together, and, as I have said, had gone such a length, I found my weakness and inclination was not to be resisted, but I was obliged to yield up all even before he asked it. However, he was so just to me that he never upbraided me with that, nor did he ever express the least dislike of my conduct on any other occasion, but always protested that he was as much delighted with my company as he was with the first hour we came together. I mean, came together as bedfellows. It is true that he had no wife, that is to say, she was as no wife to him, and so I was in no danger that way, but the just reflections of conscience oftentimes snatch a man, especially a man of sense, from the arms of a mistress, as it did him at last, though on another occasion. On the other hand, I thought it was not without secret reproaches of my own conscience for the life I led, and that, even in the greatest height of the satisfaction I ever took, yet I had the terrible prospect of poverty and starving, which lay on me as a frightful spectre, so that there was no looking behind me. But as poverty brought me into it, so fear of poverty kept me in it, and I frequently resolved to leave it quite off, if I could, but come lay up money enough to maintain me. But these were thoughts of no weight, and whenever he came to me they vanished, for his company was so delightful that there was no being melancholy when he was there. The reflections were all the subject of those hours when I was alone. I lived 6 years in this happy but unhappy condition, in which time I brought him 3 children, but only the first of them lived, and though I removed twice in those 6 years, yet I came back the 6th year to my first lodgings at Hammersmith. Here it was that I was one morning surprised with a kind but melancholy letter from my gentleman, intimating that he was very ill, and was afraid he should have another fit of sickness, but that his wife's relations, being in the house with him, it would not be practical to have me with him, which, however, he expressed his great dissatisfaction in, and that he wished I could be allowed to tend and nurse him as I did before. I was very much concerned at this account, and was very impatient to know how it was with him. I waited a fortnight, or thereabouts, and heard nothing, which surprised me, and I began to be very uneasy indeed. I think, I may say, that for the next fortnight I was near to distracted. It was my particular difficulty that I did not know directly where he was, for I understood at first he was in the lodgings of his wife's mother. But having removed myself to London, I soon found, by the help of the direction I had for writing my letters to him, how to inquire after him, and where I found that he was at a house in Bloomsbury, whither he had, a little before he fell sick, removed his whole family, and that his wife and his wife's mother were in the same house, though the wife was not suffered to know that she was in the same house with her husband. Here I also soon understood that he was at the last extremity, which made me almost the last extremity too, to have a true account. One night I had the curiosity to disguise myself like a servant maid, in a round cap and straw hat, and went to the door, as sent by a lady of his neighborhood, where he lived before, and giving master and mistress's service, I said I was sent to know how Mr. did, and how he had rested that night. In delivering this message, I got the opportunity I desired, for speaking with one of the maids, I held a long gossip's tale with her, and had all the particulars of his illness, which I found was a pleurisy, attended with a cough and a fever. She told me also who was in the house, and how his wife was, who, by her relation, they were in some hopes might recover her understanding. But as to the gentleman himself, in short, she was told me the doctor said that there was very little hopes of him, that in the morning they thought he had been dying, and that he was but a little better then, for they did not expect that he could live over the next night. This was heavy news for me. I began now to see an end of my prosperity, and to see also that it was very well I had played a good housewife, and secured or saved something while he was alive, for that now I had no view of my own living before me. It lay very heavy upon my mind, too, that I had a son, a fine lovely boy, about 5 years old, and no provision made for it, at least that I knew of. With these considerations and a sad heart, I went home that evening, and began to cast with myself how I should live, and in what manner to bestow myself for the residue of my life. You may be sure I could not rest without inquiring again, very quickly, what was become of him, and not venturing to go myself, I sent several sham messengers, till after a fortnight's waiting longer, I found that there was hopes of his life, though he was still very ill. Then I abated my sending any more to the house, and in some time, after I learned in the neighborhood that he was about house, and that he was abroad again. End of Moll Flanders, Section 9. This recording is in the public domain.